There's no reason why that couldn't be your story.
You don't have an expiration date.
Oh, I love that. This is the Authors and Agents Podcast.
Hannah, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to chat with you, to get to know you a little bit more, and to, you know, kind of pick your mind about queries and different things. So let's start off by just talking about what drew you to publishing and being a literary agent.
Yeah, sure. First, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat today. So what drew me to publishing? I have a little bit of an unconventional path to publishing, where it was not always what I thought I was going to do, what I went to school for, anything like that. I actually started off my adult life in academia. So I was in graduate school, and after I left graduate school, just kind of like wondering what to do, if I wanted to stay in academia or not. I did not stay in academia, and decided that one thing that I had always been interested in is reading. So how cool would it be to get a job working on books? I sent out a bunch of applications right after I finished graduate school. Nothing landed. In the meantime, to help kind of make ends meet, I got a job at my local Barnes & Noble as a bookseller. So there I worked and continued applying for jobs in publishing. And while I was working there, I got my first job as an editor at HarperCollins. So while I was in graduate school, I had been doing a lot of freelance editing, more on the academic side than anything commercial or publishing. But I really used my time at Barnes & Noble to really understand where the market was. And that is, you know, part of the publishing ecosystem is bookselling. So I worked in the children's department at HarperCollins for a couple of years, where I acquired young adult and middle grade. So I worked there for a couple of years before becoming an agent. So what drew me to become an agent specifically is, even as an internal editor at a Big Five, one thing that I really loved doing was advocating for authors. That's really hard to do when you represent the publisher. So I made the jump to agenting right around the start of the pandemic, which is interesting timing. And now I have been an agent since then. So I still continue to work on children's books like I did at HarperCollins, but now I've definitely expanded to books for the little ones as well as adult genres too. And I really love being able to really just work the whole breadth. So yeah, not at all what I went to school for, not at all a childhood dream or anything. I think so many people that I've talked to in publishing really do have different paths there. And you know, there are some who definitely were the English majors, some who, you know, did communications or even have a degree like a publishing certificate, but you definitely do not need that to work in publishing.
Yeah. And I love that you've sort of done it from all sides, right? Like bookseller side, editor side, and now agent. So when you're advocating for your authors, you kind of get to, you know, and you can see, you know, all sides, which I'm sure is really valuable to your clients.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And tell me a little bit about a misconception that people have about you as a literary agent and what literary agents do.
Yeah, I think so. I have been in publishing for a while before I started working as an agent. And one thing that I was a little unprepared for when becoming a literary agent is how much your agent can sometimes feel like your publishing therapist. So as an editor, I was protected from some of that because the agent was handling all of that. But I think that a lot of writers, particularly debuts, you know, they're suffering with a lot of anxiety, where publishing is pretty opaque and you don't know what's going on the other side of the screen. And that can be really be nerve-wracking. So what's been really helpful being on the agent side, having been on the other side of the table, is being able to reassure my clients in that way, where it's like, no, just because your contract is taking a second to hit your inbox doesn't mean that they're canceling things. Just because this is how it worked with your last book doesn't necessarily mean that's going to how it's going to work with this book. So that's one thing that I was kind of unprepared for when I became an agent, was, again, how much kind of like publishing therapy you have to do. I just didn't understand really how much anxiety a lot of authors are feeling. And then I think that, you know, a lot of querying authors in particular, you're so excited when you get your agent, and you definitely should be. That's definitely something worth celebrating. But I think that a lot of authors don't really think past what it's going to be like after you get your agent. And there's a lot more rejections that are going to be coming in, a lot of trying to read between the lines or navigating feedback on your submission, if something is like a form response or not. All of those things that you were doing as a querying writer, you're still going to experience quite a few of them, even as an agented writer. It's a lot of waiting while you're on submission. It's a lot of, again, facing rejection for reasons that you might not ever really know why. So again, as having an agent on your side can be helpful to help you navigate some of that. But I think that's one thing that a lot of querying writers don't really think about. You know, their goals are just one step at a time. Let's sign with an agent and then worry about what happens next. So that can be a little bit of a shocker for I think a lot of authors, especially newly agented authors, is how much being on submission is still a lot like querying.
Definitely. I've heard that from a lot of authors who I've talked to who have been through that process. They're like, I got to that point, and then it was like submission. And it's like, then you, I feel like for a lot of people, getting an agent feels like the top of the hill. Like, oh my gosh, I made it. I'm done. Like, I got what I wanted, but oh man, there's so much more.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing to keep in mind as you go into querying, to have that mindset of like, okay, yes, this is very important and a crucial step, right, to being traditionally published, but it's not the end, unfortunately.
Yes, exactly. And even after you sell the first book, you know, some people are like, if I can just sell the first book, but then a lot of times, you know, authors are feeling anxious. They're like, am I a one-hit wonder? Will I ever sell a book again? And the answer is usually yes, but like the anxiety is always there. And that's why I think it's important for authors to really celebrate every step of the way. So even if you are prepared for being on submission or having a sophomore novel come out, is really celebrating every step of the way, because you're just going to constantly be moving your goalposts. So yes, important to celebrate every step.
Yeah. Yes, that's such good advice. Very good thing to write on your mirror. Celebrate every step. Be happy.
Absolutely.
Celebrate the wins.
yes.
Well, yeah. So my next question, two parts. I'd love to know what's the hardest part of your job as a literary agent, and then like, what's your favorite? What do you absolutely love about being an agent?
Yeah. So as an agent, you represent the author. So of course, the hardest parts for me are going to be having to share bad news with my clients. Even sending rejections to querying writers are really hard. And when I was first starting out, you know, as an editor, I'm maybe getting like, in a busy week, 20 submissions in a week from agents. As an agent, you're getting that many in a day or more. So it's a lot of rejections that you really have to, you want to still communicate. It's always my goal to communicate them kindly, to not try to break. I think querying is harder than ever, but those rejections are hard to send, and they're really hard to send to clients, to people who, you know, you are submitting their works on their behalf. And when an editor passes on something, or even when something gets really close where it might make it to the final ring and then get a pass, those moments are always really hard. And I think probably most agents will have the same thing. We get into this business because we love books and we love our authors. We feel passionate about their books. So that news is always really hard to communicate. Especially when you know it's it's an author that or a house that your author really had their heart set on, or if a publisher is like who the author already has a pre-existing relationship with, passes on an option book down the line, which can again be really hard to share that news with authors. On the flip side, getting to share good news with your clients is always really exciting. When an offer for a book comes in, and getting to, you know, hop on the call with my clients and share the good news is also really exciting. And then I also, one of the high points that I also really love about being an agent is actually offering rep. I think that those can be nerve-wracking for agents too, you know, because in the biz, sometimes we call them beauty contests, especially if they have more or multiple offers of rep, and you're like, oh goodness, I sure hope they're going to pick me. But I think that those conversations are also so fun because, again, agents get in this business because we love authors and we love, you know, taking their manuscripts and making them into books. So there's something that's super exciting to being a part of that very early relationship with a very, very early stage of a book, you know, where it still is just like a Microsoft Word document and the author just has like hopes and dreams, and then seeing it, you know, after it sells, and just like knowing the journey that you're going to take together. It's just it's really exciting.
I love that. I think, you get to be, you get to be there for those exciting first moments and the wins, and you know, it's got to be, I mean, you fall in love with the books, which is why you want to help them through the process. So it's just as heartbreaking for you, but then to be the bearer of the bad news, right? I mean, that's definitely, because the rejection doesn't end. The rejection doesn't end, and it's still part of the whole process. It doesn't get easier. I mean, maybe some people are like have a thicker skin to it, but for me, it's like, mindset-wise, I've been able to learn and grow with it, but it's still hard, right?
Yeah, and I think that even just like coupled with the uncertainty is like coupled with the uncertainty. If it's like, I don't know if this will ever sell or not, but we're still gonna try our best and have a strategy, and that could be a little stressful. That can be stressful too.
Definitely, yeah. Uncertainty always can be a little bit of fear, a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's get into some query questions, because, you know, queries are just a complicated topic when I feel like I understand why and I don't understand why too, right? Like, I think we overcomplicate it sometimes. So, you know, there's a specified formula of what your query should be. Now, this isn't your submission guidelines for your agency, because of course those should be followed, right? They're just like laid out right there. But if you Google how to write a query, you're going to get 25,000 different blog posts on how your query should be set up.
Yeah.
And so in your opinion, as an agent who reads, you know, thousands of these, do you think a query should be set up in a specified formula, you know, that isn't gimmicky, that, you know, has a beginning, middle, end, and you've got, you know, your title with your comps and all of that, or should it, you know, should they try to be out of the box?
So I always recommend sticking to the formula. A query is not the place to get creative. Sure, a lot of agents will say the same thing, but a formula that I found particularly successful is opening, you know, I'm seeking representation for XYZ, including your metadata in the opening paragraph. So your word count, your genre, comps, things like that in the opening paragraph. Then transitioning into a solid log line. A lot of people use, if they're participating in like a pitch contest, something like that, something varied that you could like tweet about it. And there are a lot of really great resources online for coming up with a killer log line. And then having your main paragraph be about the book. What is this book about? Focus on the stakes. And again, think when you're writing that about your book paragraph in your query letter. Think about what you're reading. Picture this, that you are in a bookstore and you are reading the back of a book or the jacket flap copy. That is what you want that to be. You don't want to give away answers. You don't want to delve into all the intricacies of subplot or anything like that. You don't really want to talk about the inspiration behind it or how you've wanted to be a writer since you were 5 years old. That second paragraph should be just about the book. With a focus on the stakes. And then I always recommend closing with a short bio. A lot of authors, particularly if this is going to be their debut publication, are like, what should I include in that bio? So your bio can include any publications that you have. I've worked with some clients who have also had like academic backgrounds. And they're like, you know, my scholarship in politics and international relationship informs my writing. And I currently live in New York, with my cats. So anything like that, where you can like, even if you don't have anything that you've written about, you can just like add a little personality, or say, you know, if you're writing, like a lumberjack rom-com and your spouse happens to be a lumberjack, that could be something that you could put into your author bio. So little things like that, just a couple of sentences. Most often I recommend a query letter to be between 300 and 400 words long. So these are short. That includes your bio, and includes your comp titles, and everything. So these are pretty short. And again, so a lot of times, like I think agents are always talking about, we receive so many query letters that when you do stick to the formula, an agent can kind of quickly skim through and work through things a lot more quickly, than otherwise. So a query letter is not, in my opinion, not a place to get creative. Save all that creativity for the pages. Save it for the book itself. But stick to the formula for the query letter.
I love it. I think that is good advice. I have heard, you know, that trying to stick out, trying to get the attention by doing it differently usually backfires. Mm-hmm. Usually kind of confuses the agent or just trips up the process of doing the skimming of the query letters, because you've got so many. You've got to be able to find ways to make it faster for you, you know?
Yeah. And if you, again, like if you just compare it to like the back of the book copy or jacket flap copy, those are also fairly formulaic. So just stick with that, focusing on the stakes of the story. Just like really lean into the formula and save your creativity for your pages, for the manuscript itself.
I love it. So Hannah, tell me, what is your number one query no-no? What will like automatically move it out of your list?
Yeah. So for me, my number one query no-no is not exactly like, if you're deviating from the formula a lot, fine, like I'll still give you a shot. But sometimes I receive query letters that are just like a sentence long, or like, that's it. Just like, please find enclosed my manuscript. And for me, those are usually auto rejects, because it just shows like you're not familiar with what the requirements of querying are. And it then feels unfair to the people who have spent a lot of time researching what goes into submitting. There's also no shortage of resources out there. You know, like this podcast is a great one where you're talking querying and there's a lot of stuff online. So in my opinion, those things should, even if your query letter is not beautiful and perfect, or even if it is a little bit out of the box, if you've made like an honest effort at actually writing a query letter or looking up what a query letter is, looking more like doing research into the actual business of publishing, then you are going to be set. So I don't get offended at all if people have the wrong name. Like I get called Heather a lot in query letters, and you know, I just roll with it. I'm like, it's fine. We have all been there. As long as you're making a good effort at writing a query letter, then you're going to be okay. But if you don't even do the bare minimum of what is a query letter, then that's usually my number one no-no.
Yeah. I mean, I think I like to think of it as like the start of a business relationship, kind of like a job application or a cover letter, right? You wouldn't just write, I really want this job. I really
absolutely
you know,
yeah
put some effort into it and yeah. show the professionalism that you know. I mean, I think too, you're looking for people that you want to work with who have the work ethic and all that are going to work well with this industry. So yeah, if someone is from the very beginning not putting their full effort in, which you need to, I mean, that's a really good sign. It's a red flag.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it goes back to, like, at the end of the day, when you make the decision to query agents, you're making a business decision. Publishing is a business. And when you decide to commodify your art, you are making a business decision. And before you hop into a new business, you need to do at least the minimum amount of research to really think about it. During the pandemic, there was this at the start of the pandemic, especially, there was this kind of this weird trend where I was getting a lot of queries written by parents for their kids, like pandemic projects that they've done. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, during the quarantine, me and my kid wrote a book. And while it's like, I think that's awesome for parents to do, but it's like, do you actually understand, like, are you really wanting to make this business decision with your 7-year-old child to do this? Like, do you actually understand like the implications of what you're doing? So that was a little baffling. And I had heard from other agents too, that they're like, yeah, I'm getting a lot of queries from like young children who like aren't on the computer and their parents querying their pandemic projects, which was just a little strange.
Well, we were all home a little bit, you know,
going
crazy at that time. So we'll chalk it up to that.
Yes, absolutely.
So on the flip side of your number one query no-no, what's your favorite thing to see in a query?
Yeah, my favorite thing to see in a query is, of course, like sticking to the formula. But with a query itself, I love good comps. So with comp titles, we are looking, like an agent is looking for the author showing how they recognize how their book fits on the shelf and how where their readers are. So this doesn't necessarily mean finding a one-to-one match with a plot or anything like that. One of my favorite ways to structure comps are taking specific elements from other authors who might be like you or other books that might be like yours. As an agent, when I'm pitching editors, that's exactly how I structure comps too. Able to be like, you know, the forbidden love of title A meets the assassin lead of title X or whatever, and just like taking those elements. I think you're also good to use different authors as comps too. Some authors have such, you know, notable writing styles, or like they have really strong brands where if an author might be really well known for writing these just like hilarious rom-coms, like that would be, and you are also writing a hilarious rom-com kind of in the vein of that author. So again, I think it's just a really clever and nuanced opportunity for writers to show off that they know where their readers are. They know who's going to pick up this book, and they know where their market is. So I think, again, a great opportunity for authors to really show off their knowledge there.
Yeah, I think it shows, like you're saying, like they know what the market is doing. They know what's popular now. Yeah. They, you know, they've been to the bookstore or searched Amazon or looked on, you know, Book Talk or whatever, and are aware of the current like climate of their genre, which is very important.
Yes, absolutely.
So my last query question, what would your maybe like top tip or golden rule be for authors who are in the querying trenches right now?
Yeah. So I would say two things, and they're going to be, I feel like they're at odds with each other. So one, don't be afraid to query your dream agent. I think that a lot of writers, you know, feel a little intimidated and are like, self-reject before they query their dream agents. If your dream agent is, you know, some big name at big name agency and they rep your favorite author, query them, give it a shot. But on the same token, don't discount newer agents too, who are usually more actively building their lists, because you might be surprised at how your idea of dream agent might change. So yes, those are I think are the top two, is go for those big names if you really want. Don't self-reject, but don't forget about the people who are just starting out and who are going to be the ones to change the industry and who are going to be those big names in a couple of years once they've had a chance to grow into their roles.
Yeah, don't discount your dream agent because it's your dream agent, and don't write off the newer agents too just because they're new. I mean, everybody's got to start somewhere, and if you know, you're right, the ones that are newer are usually requesting more because they're hungrier for the clients. They need to build that list, and so it's probably good to take a few from the topper tier, and from the middle tier, and then the newer agents. That's probably a good way to break up your query list too.
Yeah, I've heard from authors. I have personally never queried before, but I've heard from even some of my own clients that is what they end up doing. It's it's really a numbers game. I'm not going to discount anyone because their name is too big, and I'm not going to discount anyone because they're newer.
Yeah.
But yeah, having a healthy mix of where agents are in their careers. Definitely pros and cons to signing with both.
Yeah, definitely. So you have read someone's query, you've read their pages, you're so excited, you are on the call with them.
Yeah.
You're chatting, trying to see, kind of how you guys flow. What questions do you think is really important for the authors to be asking you on the call?
Yeah. So one question that if an author doesn't ask me, I make sure to ask them, is I always ask what else they're working on. And from an author's perspective, you want to share this information on the call, to make sure that the agent who is offering, is able to represent or has expertise or the resources, to learn what you're doing. So some authors write for a lot of different audiences in a lot of different genres. And some agents have very wide ranges of expertise and contacts, and some don't. I feel like I see this a lot with if you're writing for children versus adults, where there are some agents who might only represent kidlit and don't represent adult, and vice versa. So if you have any interest in writing for adult audiences, and you're being offered rep on a picture book or a middle grade book or something like that, find out how the agent would handle that. Is it a place that they're growing in? Is there somebody else in their agency who could provide mentorship? Would they be willing to rep it in a one-off situation, or would you be open to finding a second agent to represent things that agent might not represent? So speaking from my own experience, one of my clients has two agents. One is me, and they have one who represents their cookbooks. So I have no experience in selling or working on cookbooks. Again, my experience is in fiction or memoirs at the most when it comes to nonfiction. So that's something that we were very transparent about up front, is that I would be repping his fiction projects, his picture books, his graphic novels, and he has a second agent who reps his cookbooks, someone who has the expertise from another agency. So that's something I think that you want to be open with, and think about. A lot of times if you're just, transitioning from YA to adult, you'll have the agent will be able to do that. I think most, but when you do have, the picture book, cookbook authors who's whoa, those are really different. Then again, it's helpful just to be upfront to let them know what the plan is there.
I love that. I think that's a really good thing to talk about too, because you might change your mind. You might, be working on something that's completely different than the project you're being considered for now. So don't pigeonhole yourself before don't do it.
Yes. And I've also signed clients too, where it's I'm signing them on a YA and then their debut is actually going to be an adult novel. And they're I actually really think I prefer writing adult rather than YA. And it's cool. We'll keep doing that. that's fine. So exactly like you said, don't pigeonhole yourself. And again, I feel like, you know, just like a theme of this conversation is the importance of not self-rejecting. So don't self-reject the projects because you're afraid that your agent won't work in them or anything like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That should be above our heads right here. Don't reject
yourself. Another thing to put on the mirror for like daily affirmations.
Yes. There you go. Well, I just have a couple questions for you left. I'd love to know what you're excited about representing next. What are you hoping to see in your query inbox?
Yeah. So I am really excited to be building more of my adult list right now. So my list is pretty small and focused. And right now it skews a little heavy in the children's space. So I've got a lot of picture book writers, a lot of young adult, middle grade, and I'm really looking to expand in adult genres, so looking for the more mature. So my tastes when it comes to adults really range from light and fluffy to dark and devious. So in adult, I love fantasy. I love romance. I'm totally on the romanticy train. And the last client I signed was actually, romanticy. Writer. So that is what I'm really eager to be building my list in, is in fantasy, horror, contemporary romance, all for the adult. Now I'm still, of course, going to be like looking for my next children's literature project. But yeah, right now, actively be looking for more adult writers to be adding to my list.
Wonderful. I love it. I hope you get many more looking just right in that area.
Absolutely.
Well, yes. My last question is easy. It sounds really scary, I think, to some people because it can be hard to pick. But I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now. This is not favorite book of all time. Just something you've read recently that you're like, can't stop shouting at people about.
Yeah. So I have two. First, I have to plug a client book that just had a cover reveal recently. It is right here on my bookshelves. The Sins on Their Bones by Laura R. Samitan is available now for pre-order. This is an adult dark fantasy that's very queer, very Jewish, about two ex-husbands in a civil war who are fighting over the same throne. There's lots of magic, lots of romance, and it's in lots of suspense in it. So highly recommend adding to your Goodreads page if you like fantasy. So the second book is definitely not a client book, but I read it on vacation several years late than everybody else, as I finally read Red, White, and Royal Blue. I have not seen the movie.
A little behind on the trend there.
So behind on the trend there. But I feel like that's just par for the course where, you know, your TBR piles up. And I finally read it. And that actually like really got me into being like, I should be looking for more rom-coms because this is really good. Before Red, White, and Royal Blue, I had really been kind of on a kick of reading like the really dark horror, dark fantasy kind of stuff. And I was like, this was just fun. Give me the happily ever afters. Give me the romance and the silly antics, and just like knowing, having like the peace of knowing it's like, they'll get their happily ever after because this is a romance novel. So I doubt that book really needs shouting about because everybody knows Red, White, and Royal Blue, but that's finally one that I very late hopped on the bandwagon for, and it did not disappoint.
I love it. That is awesome. Thank you for sharing those. You know, I like you said, we all have so many books on our TBR, but we can always add more. It's never full. Mm-hmm. It's never full. I have so many. I have started to hide books in my bookshelf where my husband can't see them because he's like, did you buy another book? I'm like, yes, I did. I definitely did.
Like, what is this package we just got from Barnes & Noble? And it's like, that's nothing. Don't worry about it.
It's not a book. It's book-shaped. It feels like a book, but it is not.
Yes.
Well, Hannah, this has been an absolute blast. It's been such a joy to get to know you. You know, I love these agent interviews because authors, you know, really, I've heard from many of them that it really just helps, you know, like demystify the agent themselves, but also they find things to connect with you on, and that can help them query you. So that's my, you know, my goal in this is to help in the querying process. So thank you for letting me pick your brain.
Absolutely. And again, thank you so much for having me.